We're going to hear from Jim Tolley, who is the regional health director for Pennyrail Health Departments in this area. Jim briefed the local leaders in Crittenden County on Tuesday at the courthouse. But first, we're going to hear this quick message from the Regional Blood Center. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, many of the blood drives in the area have had to be canceled. Because of that, the West Kentucky Regional Blood Center is asking for your help. Donations are greatly needed at this time. If you can give blood, please contact the West Kentucky Regional Blood Center. See their ad in this week's printed edition of the Crittenden Press.
Well, thank you all for being here. And I'm glad that we can all meet and answer a few questions, hopefully. We in public health have dealt with these types of organisms for many, many years, okay? This is what we do every day. People don't see this, but this is what we do every day. We are in surveillance of communicable disease and organisms that affect human health. So we're not unprepared for this. It's just got a lot of media and some hysteria to it and different things. So just to get everybody on the same page, what public health is attempting to do is, normally these viruses come in with a peak, then they tail off and maybe have another peak later in the fall, okay? It's this peak that's concerning to public health right now. It's trying to not have this peak so high that it overwhelms our healthcare providers, okay? So if we can flatten this peak and extend that downward a little bit, public health feels like we're going to have less loss of life due to COVID-19, right? So, and most of that is related to the ability to care for the sickest of persons so that there's room, there's healthcare providers, there's room in hospitals, that this peak is spread out a little bit and we have room to treat some of the sickest of the persons, okay? So that's the goal of public health, is to extend that out, get it, and hope is not a strategy, but there's a little hope here, that also that the weather will begin to help us, like it does with flu virus and common cold viruses and things of that nature. So if we can extend that and we get some help from Mother Nature, then this peak starts to come down and everybody goes back to the normal, more normal way of life. So that's the overall goal. That's the overall picture of public health. What we don't know, it's a new virus, it's novel. That's why they call it novel. It's new. They don't know how it's going to react in one way. Okay? We don't know that. So if you look back at the flu or the Spanish flu of 1918, Philadelphia didn't enact social distancing and closing offices and buildings until about 3 or 4 weeks after their first cases. They had a higher death rate and another city or two in the east. St. Louis enacted it a couple of days after they got their first positive test. St. Louis's death rate was way down in comparison. Okay? So that's kind of the model that public health is extending out there on this one. Okay? So everybody understands that. That's the goal. So how do we do that? It starts to complicate each of our lives because we work in clusters of people. We congregate in clusters. The largest cluster that we have is in our public school systems in small communities, obviously. So that was probably, you know, target number one was let's see if we can spread that out. The reality of how long does that last, we don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if these 2 weeks that schools are out doesn't become that third week that's before spring break and then spring break and then an assessment. That wouldn't surprise me. I'd be preparing for that in case it is. I don't know that. I don't have any information that you don't have. Been around long enough to know they probably have that in the back of their mind. That might be the next hard talk. So I'd be thinking about that. A couple other things that's come out now. This information's rolling over us pretty fast, too. And bad thing I see you here because we've got some things for potential for the county tournament. The closing of restaurants and things of that nature, public health, we will enforce the laws of the state of Kentucky, okay, every time that we're notified and we're asked to enforce that law, we're going to enforce it. Okay? Whether that be the closing of a restaurant, the infectious nature of some individual that wants to go out and not do what they're asked to do, we will enforce those laws. Okay? We're asking community, judge, emergency manager, county attorney, to please be prepared for that in case that comes up. We've got some statutes to share that hopefully that's not a long process in accomplishing that. Okay? So, that being said, let's move on. What we need to do local. Our most vulnerable are elderly. We want to be there for them if we can. First responders, hospitals. We want to keep you guys in the game as long as we keep you in the game if this becomes a large episode to us here locally. We need you in the game. We as a community need you in the game. If you're engaged in going to a wreck and you normally don't put on full protective personal equipment, I'm asking that you do that because we need you in the game. And you don't know who may have an infectious disease, whether it be COVID-19 or TB or some other pathogen that we track. We need you in the game every day. So I'm asking that you all have that full protective equipment. If you don't have that, we need it on a list through the emergency manager in Perry's office and our office so that we get that up to the state EOC and we ask for those necessary supplies that come here. Okay? We have a shipment that's coming from the Strategic National Stockpile that's in route. Now, that, I don't mean that's coming this afternoon or tomorrow, but it's trying to get here. Anybody, I don't know when it's coming, but there'll be some stuff there if you're shorthanded or you're short on supplies and it's in this list of things we have, your first responder. We want to get that in your hand quick. That's going to come into the regional disposition center at Princeton. And we're going to ask emergency managers to come in, take possession of that in the county, and hold that and get that where it needs to go. We need to help the hospital, emergency management, and all of us help the hospital to be all they can be and then some, so be prepared that if they're trying to set up capacity for surge, that we support that and that we find ways to support that. If they have a need that we can help them with, it'll help all of us. If this goes anywhere near like it has in Europe, that could ramp up pretty quick. And we don't know that, but let's be prepared. What I'm advising everybody is we know it's coming. It's probably already in our community somewhere, and we should not pretend like it's not coming. So my plans are that the next phone call I've got is we've got a case up here, okay? So what do we do when that first case comes in? We're going to get together with emergency management, Judge Newcomb. We're going to tell the community we've got a positive case of COVID-19 in Crittenden County. It's a 37-year-old male that's hospitalized or home isolated. If you're home isolated, you're going to be there for 14 days and until you get two negative tests that you're not shedding that virus. Okay? That's what it is. If you've had close contact with a person that's been infected, we're going to ask you to self-isolate for 14 days. Watch yourself for symptoms. Report your symptoms. And that's what's going to happen. Okay, so everybody expect that this afternoon, and it won't be a shock. Expect it in the morning. Expect it with the next phone. We've got, close to here, Interstate's crisscrossing, a lot of travel that comes through our area, so it didn't take long for that to jump into our community, coming back from other travel spots and stuff like that. So I'm expecting it. I'm planning for it, and I want the community to be aware that that's what we're going to do. Now, with that report that comes in that's positive, our public health team surveils for public disease all the time. We've got a team put together that's ready to do the contact investigations. So, positive X, we're going to interview positive X. We're going to see the contacts of who positive X have. We're going to trace their contacts to see who they've been. And we're going to ask all of those that fall in a parameter to self-isolate for 14 days and longer. Okay? If you're a person that's taking a test, you're actually tested, you should self-isolate for 14 days and monitor yourself for symptoms, okay? Now, this is an illness. We have illnesses all the time. We have respiratory infections all the time. If you're well and you wouldn't ordinarily go to the healthcare facilities, don't go to this one. If you're just worried well at home, don't go around the healthcare facility. There's not any antivirals, there's not any therapeutics that we know of for this at this time. So you're going to get better just like you do when you catch those little bugs that we don't have now. Everybody here has had a 24-hour bug. Oh, they have a 24-hour viral bug or something. This one may last longer than that, but there's no need to treat unless you're in a situation where you would normally seek medical care. We don't want to overwhelm our healthcare. Okay? So that's advice, and that's coming out from CDC, State Department of Health, World Health Organization, National Institutes of Health. Everybody's pretty much saying the same thing. We want to keep our hospitals, our first responders, and our utilities water. We need to keep the water systems going, because if we do have a lot of people isolated at home, we've all got water piped in from the municipal water supplies, and in fact, water doesn't come on when they want it, and we're going to have a little more hysteria than we're going to deal with. So whatever our utilities need to help stay in the game helps keep everybody home. Sewer, water, I think, is an infrastructure that we want to try to protect. I don't know how many licensed operators and things they have here, but it's something that we probably need to look at through emergency management and county systems to see. So I want people to think a little larger than just me. If your neighbor has a bunch of children and they work in a job where they've been laid off, and we've got others that's hoarding food, buying sanitizers, and maybe this family can't afford that. And we just keep taking from that. We got to be self-conscious of those types of things. That doesn't really help anybody, okay? So we need to be good neighbors and watch out for those that are a little less fortunate. We've got to make it through this too. I encourage everybody to shop local, support local business. Local businesses are going to take it. We know that. It's going to be painful for some of them. It's going to be beyond painful. So if we can train locally, it helps us all. The room news. You know, we'll never fix that. But if we have a positive that shows up, we're not going to hide it. We're not sweeping under the rug or anything else. We're going to come, we're going to say we've got a positive in Trickland County, okay? And we're just going to all deal with that. It's going to affect some of the families and friends of people you know, okay? Support them however we can. We do need to limit these size of gatherings as often as we can. Some of us have some critical business that needs to be done, and I don't think we're stopping all critical services and businesses that way. We've got people to depend on. If your agency or is here and you make a decision that affects your business or public group, consider how the decision that you make affects your neighboring partner. And for example, and not here, but we have a nursing home who were shipping patients to a hospital for care, which is a normal thing, happens every day. Well, the patient got ready to go back to the nursing home, and then the nursing home wouldn't allow them in for that patient because the nursing home changed the rules and built a game while the patient was out the door. So those types of decisions that's upstream of your facility or downstream has an impact. Just think about that before we do something that cuts a lifeline off, okay? So that's just planning and being aware and planning for this to be here today or tomorrow, not 3 months from now, and then we're not as in shock. So, questions?
I have a couple. You mentioned water supply, water permits, sewer permits. Should we be checking with the Department of Water just in case? I mean, we've got three guys that are permitted, but let's say they all go down sick. You know, do we, should we be working with them on contingencies, or is that something we'll be working with you guys on contingencies?
So, post 911, when I say that, we've got a influx of money through most of our organizations and agencies and counties and cities for preparedness planning. Okay. Part of that preparedness planning had something they call a COOP, continuation of operation plans. If you don't have that, work on that a little bit. How am I going to continue the operation of my facilities? COOP. So develop some relationships with some neighboring water systems who may have operators, and see if you can get some agreements between that. If I have a need and you don't, I've got an extra body and you don't, I'll send mine over there. Would you do the same for me? Those are continuous operation procedures that we all need to be thinking about what we're going to do. So the sooner you can develop things like that, that'll help you. Maybe staggering employees when they come in. I know most of us don't have a plethora of employees sitting around. At least we don't got that. So that planning ahead will save you a lot of heartburn if you get that call, three of my guys are out. Now what am I going to do? Now it's an emergency because you got a limited time frame to get that water going. Okay? So, and that same thing goes for all of us within our agencies. Like, what is my critical function? Who's dependent upon me? And what can I do to continue that to where I don't become a burden or our facility doesn't? So that's the ask on that sort of thing. Public health, quasi-state agencies have been under a vice for the last several years. 10 years ago, we had 25 public health nurses in this district, and we could respond with a bunch of people real quickly. We now have 6 to serve all 5 counties. Okay? So we are stretched thin. We're stopping services that we're doing to focus on this because it's right now, this is what we do. And this is why we have a little reserve of money so that something like this doesn't come up and devastate our agency where we can't respond. I say that because I want everybody here to realize what that pension crisis across the state has the potential to cost all of us more than just a few dollars up front. So anyway, I put that in there because I want you to let your elected officials know that it has an impact. So I had to pause for a little bit.
You mentioned the equipment that's going to be provided for the lower interest. I know on the call yesterday there was a discussion about the fittings of the masks. Is there any list that has been developed to identify those who can teach people to properly fit those masks?
Well, I'm sure the scanner fit is an option.
I've been out for 8 years, and so I don't know what equipment is out there fully right now as far as those types of machines, but you know, like surgical masks don't have to be fitted necessarily. Those N95s you wear,
they do have to be fit
okay.
tested.
So,
I'm not sure if they have to fit same way for coronavirus.
Well, right, so,
yeah.
And that's where I was getting ready to go. Corona is, it's not noxious gas, you know, it's not floating through the air widely, you're going to take one breath of it and knock it out of the thing. It's a fairly heavy aerosol, and about 6 feet of separation is what's recommended. So some protection is better than no protection. So if you can't get fitted just properly, then that's not the end of the world. You know, sometimes you just got to take what you got and go on with it. If we get through the fit testing and all that, that'd be great. I'm not saying that, I'm not telling you to wear stuff improperly, but if you put on an N95 and you're a first responder, you're better than not wearing it.
to shed a little light on that. I know some of the guidance we've been giving from infection control at the hospital is like those surgical masks, they're designed more to keep stuff from getting out. They can be turned the other way. So like you're saying, it's not ideal as those N95 masks, but if you flip those, that barrier acts in the opposite way. So it does offer a little more. That's some of the guidance we've been giving.
Thank you.
Rick, weren't you kind of assembling a list?
Yeah, I got a list for our department together for the mass fit test for tomorrow. As a matter of fact, if there's anybody else that needs it, they can get in touch with me. That's with the police department if y'all need some. Yeah. We'll schedule. Get you out there. But if you want it done, you have to shave your beard.
I had some questions, Jim, that I don't know if we've got answers for you, but I told them I would ask. These are calls that have come in this morning. One was on Jim's. Is there any, have you heard any word about asking Jim's to close?
Jim's in respect of the high school gym?
No, like workout facilities. Plant fitnesses, those type facilities.
I don't know that we're going to get a guidance on every single facility that exists out there, whether it's a gymnasium or a bank. You know, the guidances are, you know, to lessen crowds, lessen groups. You know, one-on-one with somebody is a very, 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 very low risk of transmission and things of that nature. So, I mean, I don't know that you're going to get that answer unless there's a statewide thing that comes out from the governor and says, stop all business.
So maybe just a suggestion of a sign on the door that reminds people gatherings of 10 or less is...
I think that's more suitable than today. It's, okay. You know, it's 10 or less. And there's still things you can do to conduct some business that's not necessarily harmful. You know, some of the critical needs that you may have in county government. I went into a federal building yesterday. The building was locked. I knocked. They came. They unlocked the door. I went and did my business. They locked the door behind me. When I got done, I come out. The next one went in. So, you know, there's things that can be done. There's ways that we can work and get stuff done that's not harming the public, okay? We just have to be careful that one don't become two, become four, become 8, 16. And that's the caution, is that, you know, how we all are. We want what we want. We want it by now. So it becomes that if you're not careful. So use common sense, social distancing, wash your hand. That all works to prevent disease and spread.
Another question came from the campground committee down at Riverview Park about closing that. And my answer to them was I would assume not, since state parks aren't being required to close. But
yeah.
I would ask the question.
I personally, I don't see any harm in that. The likelihood of infection at this point from one person to the next is still pretty low.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still pretty low.
Right. That's all right. Sam McLeod called about his auction Saturday, but I told him it's open air, just make an announcement for everybody to try to keep separation.
Yeah. And I expect more guidance as well. Keep coming out from the governor's office. He's been out in front of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Jim, what can you tell us about testing, the process, the availability?
And thank you for asking questions. You all ask questions, and I'll try, because I've had so many of these discussions, I sometimes don't remember what I touched on and what I don't last, because this is the third one today, or fourth one today, did one twice. But the testing, testing is becoming more available. It's becoming more available quicker in the larger population centers, obviously. rural America are going to be the last one that gets readily available testing, okay? So when this first opened up, we had few tests, and a great percentage of those tests got used up by people that we already knew were going to be negative, but things jumping up and down when testing, okay? So right off the bat, the country realized we can't be doing that, or we're not going to have any tests for those that really need it. So we started screening. Have you been where it's been in contact? Is there a reasonable chance you have that and you have all these symptoms? And now, locally, to go through the Division of Laboratory Services and Department of Health, is they're going to screen you for flu, and they're going to screen you for strep and some other things to make sure you don't have those organisms, and that's what's making you ill. So I think the testing is going to ramp up. These private labs are going to ramp up. When it does, it starts to change the equation when it gets into our communities and really gets widely available. We're likely to see an immediate spike of numbers of people positive, and then it's going to possibly become so commonplace that it's not as concerning to us. Right now, it's concerning to us because we haven't had the first one. Once we work the first case here, everybody's going to realize that I'm not immediately impacted or I'm not immediately going to get this infection. There's things you need to do to help protect you and your family, and you all know those by now. You all know those. So that testing is a little available. We have a handful of tests. If somebody, and I mean a handful, meets all the parameters through the Division of Laboratory Services, that we can get that testing. But just because you want one doesn't mean you're going to get one, okay? So we've had folks that have went around to four or five different providers trying to get tested, and every one of them decided that the person really didn't fit the criteria to get tested. So we've got that. We've got people crying, well, I've got COVID-19. Well, my buddy got tested for COVID-19. Well, I don't know. Most of those aren't true. I don't know if that answers your question, but they're becoming more available, and I expect in the next couple of weeks that testing's going to get spread out.
Jim, you was talking about personal protective equipment if we went out on, a test or something. When I think about my personal protective equipment, it's my turnout gear, whatever. Just what all, are you talking about the mask, the gloves, and what all else?
Well, I'm not an expert in personal protective. I'm not a clinician, and I'm not a first responder, okay? So I'll just tell you what I've been hearing. There's some folks in here that may, are you an infectious control?
No, I'm not a hospital administrator.
Okay, is there anybody here that's in infectious control?
Well, we've got the EMS, in which Dana and Mark and me are all three.
So you all jump in.
Yeah, for PPE, or what they're telling you, and what we do in the ambulance, make sure you have your gloves on, a mask, especially if it's TB or something, when we put them in a truck. You don't have to gown up, you don't have to do all that. Just make sure that you don't get none of anything from their mucous membranes, from the eyes, if they're crying, a tear, or something like that. Don't get that, on you, on here. Any of your, don't touch your face, any of that. Use your gloves, and after you take your gloves off, hand sanitizer, and anything y'all can think of, Mark?
Well, I'm sure every department's a little bit different. I mean, we came out last week with guidance, specific guidance for our employees to follow. We changed it, we revised it Wednesday, we revised it Thursday, Saturday, revised on Sunday night. And that happens because every day the CDC says something a little bit different, public health finds out something a little bit different. So we have tried to stay up with all of that. We're actually trying to start the screening process to identify suspicious cases at dispatch. We've asked them to ask questions such as, has anybody, have they been out of the country? Do they have flu-like symptoms? Do they have a fever? Those are the big three. We identify people within EMS that are high risk. If they have a fever of 100.1 or higher,
If they have other flu-like symptoms, or if they have respiratory, some kind of respiratory issue. And if we identify them as high risk, we put on a disposable gown, and this is before we get to the house. If it is a house, we send one person, one crew member in, and not two, till we can identify those things. We send that one crew member in with a gown, gloves, an N95 mask with a surgical mask over the N95 mask, because that's what public health and CDC is recommending. What am I forgetting? Oh, and a face shield. And then there's certain procedures, that invasive procedures, that if we do things to a patient, we have to have even a PAPR or a CAPR on for it. And that's a little bit tough because the animal service doesn't have a CAPR or a PAPR here in Cricket County. I've got one on the way up here now, Judge, and I've got another one in state located. So we will have it. But we're trying to just keep people clean. We're trying to avoid contact when possible. We're trying to, every hospital is a little bit different on how they want to receive these patients. Some hospitals have set up an area specific for flu-like victims. I would suggest to you that if you think you have the flu, you don't necessarily need to jump up and run to the hospital. They don't really want to see you at the hospital necessarily. You need to maybe call them first. We try to call every hospital before we take them in by ambulance because every hospital has a different door now. They want us to take those patients to. They have a different process. So we've taken it very seriously. And so far, our PPE supply is it's not great, but it's sustainable. And I think actually we've only seen Tuesday? It runs together. I think since Saturday up here, we've only documented two high risk of what we define as high risk in this county. So right now it's kind of business as usual, but it's kind of preparedness as picked up a little
bit. Now, some of the earlier guidances that I saw that if you're in that full personal protective equipment attire and you handle a positive who ends up being positive, then right now the guidance that I've got is that then you don't have to isolate for 14 days, okay? So that's keeping you in the game, what I was talking about earlier. If you're considered exposed, you come out of the game, okay? That hurts us if it's in a time when it's a critical time for this thing. So that's why when I say keep in the game, and it's first responders, I understand it's difficult. I got to put all that on. It's just a car wreck. It's not just a car wreck right now because it could take you out of the game, and you know chances are your exposure is very little, and you can be in the game the whole time. So that's why we're asking that you try to get that equipment. If you don't have it, send it to who is the emergency manager now?
Chuck.
Okay. Get it into your emergency manager. Get it on the list. Let's get it to state EOC. Bring it through public health and let me send it through our shop, State Health Operations Center. So let's try to get it up there and get that equipment in it because we want the first responders and healthcare and the hospitals to be equipped as much as we can get it.
Jim, how long is that virus last on, like a metal, like going on, or and even on cloth or stuff?
Yeah, well, and the science on that is it's been all over the place. You know, I've heard from a few hours to 5 days.
Oh,
so,
really?
You know, I don't want to give you false information, so I don't think the world has got that figured out yet. So, you know, the frequency of cleaning and washing and disinfecting, we've started every day just coming in. First several minutes of our day is we're disinfecting our own working station and our commons area. We're just going to do that every morning, just like starting a coffee pot. That's what we're going to do every morning, right on through this. That's what we're going to do every day.
Any other questions for Jim from anybody? Yeah, John.
My name is Jonathan James, and I own Bright James, which is the only childcare facility in the county. And the governor announced yesterday at 4 that we would close by the business Friday. But in that announcement, he mentioned that essential workers or medical personnel might get an exception and that their children might be able to be in care. And I was contacted last week by two different organizations, the Division of Regulated Child Care and someone out of Livingston County, who I don't know who it was because they didn't know, about if we were willing to be a child care facility that would care for the children of these workers. And we are willing to do that, but we've had no further guidance on when or how or who qualifies as essential worker. And so I'd like some information on whether that's going to happen, if that's a possibility, and how that should be done.
Well, obviously, I don't have the answer to that today, but I will pursue it and ask emergency management as well through the EOC if we can get some questions up, see if there's some further guidance on that, okay? And will you, do you have a phone number that you would like me to contact you with?
Yes, sir. 270-704-5161. That's Bright Beginnings.
Where's your facility? Where's it located?
It's here in the county, Highway 60, about 2 miles from the spot.
Just a mile outside town, maybe. Past the Tiny Tot. Yeah, Old Tiny Tot.
Old Tiny Tot.
And we are a licensed daycare, and we can take children from age 2 up to age 12. So school-age children of essential workers, now the school's out, if they need care, we can take those as well.
Up to how many, Jonathan?
Our capacity is 34.
34.
Are they going to lift restrictions on that capacity? I mean, that's been one of our concerns.
That's another question we haven't got answered yet, John.
When I contacted DRCC, Division of Regular Child Care, about waiving that so that we could take on more children, they said that they weren't planning on it this time. They didn't have any guidelines on it. And of course, now that we're closed, we have plenty of capacity.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for Jim? Okay. I failed to introduce Alicia. Alicia Kite.
Okay.
Are you still our regional environmentalist director, right? And slash executive assistant slash, yeah.
Alicia is our director of administrative services, and she's wearing a lot of high hats, a few extra ones right now, but she's been the environmental director here for a long, long time, and she is also a health inspector, has been for a long, long time, so she's well-versed in helping to coordinate a lot of things.
Right. Does a good job. That being said, I do want to give John Gleason just a minute or two if he would like to say a few words with respect to our hospital and what they're doing to prepare, help prepare, be prepared to help all of us in this crisis. So, John, you want to mention a few things?
Sure. Thank you. I haven't met everybody yet, but I'm John Gleason. Been here a couple months, and the biggest pandemic since 1918 has hit, so it's been a little bit of excitement. But we're taking lots of steps. It's good to hear of all the support in the community and the professionals that are out there working. One thing we want the community to be aware of, we have accelerated some of our visitation restriction plans. We'd ask everyone to just be patient, and we apologize for any inconvenience. We have designated, as this gentleman was mentioning, we've designated a single entrance at this point, effective at 2:00 today, for all visitation to come in and out of. Those people will be screened between our ER doors and asked those patient identifying questions. Once they're allowed in and they're screened through that, they will then have their temperature taken. It's an extra precaution we're taking. If you have a temperature, we're not going to allow you in. If you can't answer those questions, we're either going to say, would you like to be seen by a provider in the emergency room, in our triage room to isolate you? And if you say no, then we're going to say, okay, you can't come in, go home, right? And then we're going to be calling guys like Jim to let them know that we have someone who met that criteria but didn't want to be we didn't want to be screened. So we're also very actively engaged in that. We are constantly receiving guidance from the Department of Health and the CDC. We are constantly inventorying our PPE levels at this time. We are doing some N95 fit testing. We'd be happy to work with anyone else who would need to get that taken care of. We want to be an active partner in the community. I guess I can't overstate enough facts over fear in this particular situation. We to date have not had any tests even performed at our facility for COVID-19, but we do have that testing capability on the shelves, and we're aware how to do that. Other precautions as it advances, if we happen to get a case in a surrounding county or within Crittenden County, we may end up doing some type of drive-through testing service so that those people don't even come in and expose anyone else. So just ask for your patience in those things. We do have an infection control nurse on staff who's constantly evaluating the situation too. We've actually formed a COVID-19 committee that is basically meeting almost every day at this point to discuss the latest releases from the Department of Health and from the Centers for Disease Control, and making recommendations for those things. What questions would you guys have for me in this process and our preparations? One concern we have had is about daycare and what that means for our nursing and other staffing levels. So it's good to hear that there's some resources available in that. As Jim had mentioned, we also are planning making contingency plans. Just reinforce that for critical staffing levels. If something were to happen and we had to go crunch down to absolutely essentials, we've already made plans for who those critical staffing people would be, who could work from home, what are those necessary things to keep those services around and going. We'd also ask you to utilize the Kentucky State Hotline prior to coming to the hospital. If you don't feel well, they'll help screen you through some of those questions. And as was stated, those things most people can probably be at home okay and get through this just fine. But certainly if you're exhibiting some of those severe symptoms, come in. We want to help you. We don't want to wait to provide those services for you. Our staff are well trained. Our providers are well trained, and they know what they're doing. They know how to help you. What questions do you have for me? Our capacity right now, we have 48 beds. However, that would essentially drop in half for isolation. We have two specific negative pressure rooms that we're keeping open right now to put once those patients come in, we're going to put those first patients in those negative pressure rooms if they qualify to stay in the hospital. If not, we can and have been allowed to use other rooms as isolation rooms. Just following standard isolation precautions of that body substance isolation, that PPE. So, like I said, I think our biggest need from the community right now is facts over fear, and use some good common sense. Call the hotline first. If they recommend to you to come in, please call us ahead in advance and say, we've been asked to come into the hospital for testing so that we can assure that we have proper arrangements made for you as you come in, because we do need to isolate you. If you have any family members that are around you at the time, they also become patients under investigation. That's the official designation for you. So they will have to come in and also be isolated at that time for the testing. But like I said, we have testing supplies. We have personal protective equipment. We have not tested anyone to date, knock on some wood, for COVID-19. But we feel that we're very well prepared. I think the goal is just not to overwhelm the system at any point.
Do you
you know the turnaround time from testing to results? I know you
were right.
All over the place from, you know, same day, some places 5-6 days.
Right. Initially, it was 3 to 5 days. I know that they are working, and maybe you can answer that better. I know that they are working on other testing options currently that would expedite that. So you get tested. If you're not in a critical condition and need that life-sustaining care, more likely that you'll be sent home to self-quarantine and go through the steps there. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you, John. Just for a brief county overview of kind of where we stand, just to let you all know, first and foremost, with respect to the N95 respirators, our fire departments, I know Mattoon, Shady Grove, Sheridan, Caldwell Springs, I think all of you all do quite a bit of response to vehicle accidents and things. So just keep that in mind about the need for that PPE. If you don't have people that are fit tested on N95 respirators, you know, like Rick said, see him. He can get you set up for that if you have people that are willing to do that or need to do that. I think at this point we want to try to limit that to first responders only. You know, we don't, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some in the public that would say, well, I need to be fit tested for N95 respirator so I don't get the COVID-19. Well, let's get everybody that has to be fit tested first and foremost, and not, you know, try to quell this mass panic type situation. And that's the purpose for this meeting. It's to dispel some of the fear and make it factual and let our community know that as a group of first responders and primary stakeholders in the community, that we're educating ourselves on the COVID-19 virus and that we're doing everything we can possibly do to be proactive and be prepared should it and when it comes. I think it's a win case, but we'll see. You know, hopefully we'll do all this preparation and we won't have anybody test positive, and it'll start to, you know, that curve that Jim talked about will start to dispel, and we won't have those problems. Crittenden County, you all do a lot of, I think, accident responses as well. I knew I was leaving somebody out. So just if you all can help spread the factual word about what's going on, I think that's important. I don't do Facebook. I have a hard time with Facebook because it's difficult for me sometimes to control my emotions at some of the things I see on Facebook, so I just don't do Facebook. It works out better that way. I'm more of a face-to-face type guy. So, but those of you who do, you know, if you see something on there that's a little questionable or a little out of character for what we know to be factual, don't hesitate to let them know, you know, to please don't be spreading this type of information. This is nowhere near factual. Here's the facts. So I think it's going to take all of us. You know, there's a lot going on. Communication is the key, obviously. Chuck has been involved in all these conference calls. I think I'm charging my phone on average about 3 to 4 times a day right now from all the text messages and the conference calls and the video conferences and everything else. But we'll continue to keep ourselves educated. We'll continue to push out information as we get it. You know, as Mark mentioned, the changes, they come rapid, sometimes hourly, sometimes by the minute. The Pennyroyal Area Judges group, we've all been in contact with one another. We're all working with one another because, you know, obviously county lines don't mean anything to those in the workplace, those that have to shop for groceries, or I agree with Jim, shop locally if possible, but we all know people go out of our area to do those things as well. So, you know, all of us are working together to keep abreast of what's going on and what each county's implementing. I've had a lot of question about a declaration for state of emergency. I have not declared a state of emergency at this point. Simply from the fact I don't want to create that fear factor in the public, for one thing, and for another, we don't have any confirmed cases in West Kentucky. We don't have any near West Kentucky yet. So I think at this point we need to just continue to prepare. We need to continue to work every which way we can possibly to be prepared for when we do get that case. And then we may revisit that and look at what that means. I know Mark mentioned bringing in a couple pieces of equipment for EMS. Fire departments, if you all go out and buy some N95 respirators that you can't get through the health department or through emergency management, and you want to go ahead and get those and be prepared, keep up with all those expenses. Keep up with any expense that you have related to the protection of health and provision of safety during this thing, because all those things are going to be a part of Category B expenses that could be reimbursed later and should be reimbursed later because we've already got a federal declaration. So by having that federal declaration already, there's really no need in me to do a local state of emergency. But if it comes to it and I see that we need to do that, we will, to allow some procurement things to be worked through a little quicker than what they ordinarily are. But at this point, I don't see a need for that. As I mentioned earlier, the governor sent down word this morning that we were to close all public access to governmental offices and buildings. And so as of this afternoon, I have signed an executive order that closes our courthouse to the public. Does that mean nobody's going to be here if you call or come to the door? No, that's not what it means. What it means, actually, where'd Chris go? Okay. I don't want to mess up his computer. I don't know what he's got going on there. Basically, if anybody comes to the door of the courthouse over the next several days, and I don't know how long this is going to last. None of us do. We've been told 2 weeks, could be 2 months, could be who knows how long. But at this point, if you come to the courthouse over the next several days, you'll see a sign like this on every courthouse door. It basically lists every office in the courthouse, the point of contact, the phone number, the fax number, and an email address. First thing you can do, and anybody in the public can do, is call the number to that office. If you've got a need, express that need by your phone conversation. If it can be met, the office will do everything they possibly can to meet that need and walk it to the door and provide that service to you at the courthouse door. If it can't be, then hopefully it's something that could be emailed, hopefully it's something that could be faxed, and you can make arrangements through that process. We're all gonna be here working. Our road department, they're essential personnel. We've gotta keep our roads safe and in travel condition, and so our road personnel will continue to work. If you drive up out there for a need, doors are gonna be locked. There'll be a sign on the door, call this number. So don't expect to be able to gain access to that facility, but we're working. The animal shelter, same thing. Our animal control officer will be working. It's gonna be closed to the public. We're not gonna be having any animal adoptions. We're not gonna be doing the special PetSmart adoption drives that we do. He will respond to calls on vicious animal calls and on cruelty cases. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that would be a have-to case. We're trying to not to take owner surrenders. Obviously, if there's a death of an elderly person that had an animal, in that case, yes, we'll go retrieve that animal and take care of it for the family or whoever, whatever the need is. But at this time, that facility will be on lockdown. The convenience center, we will be continuing to operate the convenience center, namely because that's a health concern. You know, we can't let people's trash pile up around their homes and in their trash cans. So we will have the convenience center in operation. We're asking everyone that uses that facility to stay in their vehicle. We'll do window transactions only. I told Jason I think his arm's about 3 foot long, and hopefully the customer's arm's about 3 foot long, so stay at arm's length, and you should meet that 6 foot social distancing requirement, and we'll be good. But so we're gonna, you know, the detention center, they've already been on lockdown. That came last week, I think it was. And, you know, there was question initially about passing an executive order
to not make any arrests unless it was a violent offense or something of that nature. I don't intend to make that executive order. I think we can communicate between law enforcement and the detention center. We get those things worked out on a case-by-case need. We had that happen last night. It worked just as we hoped it would. So from that standpoint, again, everybody's just trying to work together. We're kind of inventing the program as we go because we've never had to do this before. Does anybody have any questions at all with respect to county services? And yeah, Dave.
Might not be county services, but one concern that I had is we're getting shortages at the grocery store as far as food pantries and places like that. Hourly, a year ago, we got a lot of hourly workers that are not working right now. How are we preparing to have assistance?
It's a great question, and I agree the stocks on the shelves are getting a little bare in some cases. I was on a conference call earlier with county executives across America, mainly on the West Coast and the Northeast. Some of those officials had made statements that our grocery stores are running out of food, they're running out of essential personal items that people have to have. And people are starting to get irate, and there's a lot of unrest that's starting to occur. And that's a potential. But at this time, according to my understanding of our local supermarket, they're, at this point, keeping up with demand. Yes, you may go in there and see, instead of having 1,000 loaves of bread on the shelf, they may only have 400 or something. They're not saying there's not going to be a shortage look at this point, but the main thing again is at this point there's no need for everybody to rush to the grocery and try to fill their house with 3 months worth of food items. So just try to stress to people, carry on or as ordinary as you possibly can. With respect to our food bank, we're going to continue to offer food. Our distribution is the last Friday of every month, which would be next Friday, the 27th. Tomorrow, we've got a great group of volunteers that are gonna be there to offload the delivery and start bagging up those bags for the people that need that service. And next Friday, we'll have them ready. We're gonna ask everybody to stay in their car there as well. We're not gonna have them come up and sign up. If you drive a vehicle through, you're gonna get loaded with the food stuff that's available to be given out. Did that kind of answer most of your question?
We've got a lot of people that are hourly workers that are now not working by services and waiters and that kind of thing. And so they're going to be turning to churches for assistance. And so that is part of my concern is to make sure the food pantry is still there.
Yeah.
And, how do we meet those needs?
Yeah, Brother Aaron's got, I think, something to add.
We have a food pantry at our church, and we get a delivery tomorrow as well. Mm-hmm. We are currently inventorying our food pantry today. We inventoried it. We're going to inventory what we get tomorrow, and we are creating a plan to work through, if this goes for a long period of time, how to ration that out to serve people for a long period of time. We've already seen an uptick in people coming to us for food just this week already. We've had several people come. I can't tell you the difference in numbers right now, but I do know that we've already seen several more than we normally have. And so we're beginning to put things in place to prepare for what you're talking about. Because there will be a lot of families that we will have to decide to buy food or pay the bills.
Right.
And so we want to be there to help us as much as we can.
Right. And the governor did, as part of one of his executive orders, he's relaxed the waiting period for unemployment benefits to start flowing through. So those people that do find themselves unemployed, I would suggest they go as quickly as they possibly can to the unemployment office and try to sign up for benefits. so they don't have that major gap. I know that's not an equivalent amount of income for them, but at least it's some. And hopefully we'll bridge the gap, and by him working to try to relax some of those requirements, I think that should help speed that process significantly. Yeah, ma'am.
Spot no food. Food is on everybody's mind. It is a big factor for us. Everybody knows, most folks know that our food service, our school district food service and transportation, to make a feeding plan. We started that today for our student group. We're running 8 routes with about 4 or 5 stops on each route, delivering food to sites and to actual households along the way. School-aged children, or parents of school-aged children, can swing around the elementary school and pick up a lunch around the back for their students. And from what I understand from Emily, we can feed students from, or for children from age 1 to 18. So we take that very serious. That's a very important part of our plan, not only linking them up to lessons so that we keep learning fresh for our kids, but also feeding them. But to also, and there's also a phone number that if we miss somebody on all those avenues, there's a phone number that students can call, or parents can call, and we will deliver to the kids as well. But also, you know, we're paying attention to or preparing for, you know, as we become more isolated, the social and emotional needs of all folks. I think that's going to be a big need that's going to sneak up on us. And then I'll just close with, I think, you know, a topic like this kind of amplifies the need of our community to have good internet, Wi-Fi. Not only just for education, which would be helpful for us. The kids can upload, we've uploaded lessons into the Chromebooks, and we're able to take those home and make them work offline on those. But there's a lot of resources that we can push through the internet as well. But also like telemedicine as well. You know, we're not trying to flood the emergency rooms or protect our emergency phones. Telemedicine is a
Good program. Obviously, I think that the summer feeding program guidelines was allowed to be utilized during this period. Is that right? So the governor opened that up.
Kids to feed them,
right.
Or we don't have to see them eat.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. You know, Vince brought up a good point with telemedicine and not overwhelming the doctor's offices and the emergency rooms and those type things. And John touched on that, as did Mark and Jim. But that was one of the first things they brought up in one of the first conference calls we had was, you know, if you feel sick, don't rush straight to your doctor. Don't rush straight to the hospital. If you truly feel like you have the symptoms of COVID-19, call ahead, you know, so they can be prepared. Let them know what's going on, and they can make arrangements to either come out to your vehicle just to check, to limit that exposure to the general public. The governor established the COVID-19 hotline. It's an 800 number. Chris has it posted on the press website. And just to forewarn everybody, if you talk to people that are going to call that number, let them be prepared. It's actually the poison control hotline. So they'll get an answering service that says, thank you for calling the Kentucky Poison Control Center and COVID-19 hotline. And they could be on hold for quite a long time before they actually speak with someone. And then there's also the website, the kycovid19.ky.gov, that has pertinent information and up-to-date information. They're updating that regularly. So if somebody does have internet capability, if they do have the faculties to access that, then let everybody know about that website as well. So there's resources available to keep everybody abreast of what's going on. I think, Adam, do you or Jared have anything to add from the city standpoint?